and welcome to Untold. We are back for another episode. I'm really excited to get into the detail of this episode. There's a lot of learnings I know that you guys as listeners will take from this. And as always, we want to focus on the tangible stuff that you guys can take away, but also on founder mental well-being and health as well. So super excited to introduce you to Lottie Unwin from the Copy Club.
Hello.
Lottie, how are you doing?
Good, thanks.
Good. As we always do, we kick off with, like, give us a little bit about you, like your career so far. Like, give us a bit of colour to Lottie as a person, rather than a kind of, like, the brand that is, your personal brand that's
sure.
There.
Sure. Okay, the real story. I was a super high-achieving teacher's pet who couldn't get anything wrong, who decided that 95% in every module of all of her A-levels was the only thing that was acceptable. Yeah, like properly had to tick every box. And then went to Cambridge. From there, went to Procter & Gamble to do marketing because none of the management consultants replied to my emails. And that's kind of where I found a real love for marketing and did a few years, again, being the teacher's pet, front row of every training session. There's a real theme here. Hand up first. And then I moved to Propercorn. So I left corporate world to go to Propercorn as like head of marketing in heavy inverted commas, because I was way too young to be promoted into that job. They just needed to give me a job title that made it clear that I was going to be paid slightly more than some other people in the team.
Yeah.
I think that's where the teacher's pet like versus real world clash happened.
Yeah.
I had not a clue what I was doing. Did not know how to do startup marketing at all, because it turns out being able to sell like £15 million of D&G TV adverts is really not the same as being able to, like, lo and behold, like, actually not that transferable. Turns out, yeah, really, really different to selling a few bags of popcorn in a corner shop. And that's where Copy Club started. And so then from there, my journey's kind of been a model through startup life. That then became me being a freelancer. I'm really passionate about travel, so that's always been like quite a deciding energy in like the way I've shaped my life. So lived in India for a few years.
Amazing.
And like all through that time before then, had kind of taken every single moment of time I could to go on adventure.
Yeah.
That like sort of becomes quite a blurry line from the first ever supper club I ran when I left P&G and went to Propercorn and realised I just needed some help because I found the world way too lonely, to where we are now, which is 1,000 members, growing every day, and now quite a big team. So there's 17 of us, and it's like actually working as a business.
Amazing.
And then I think kind of me around that is just like absolute passion for work, because I've always worked incredibly hard, both because I'm a bit addicted to work, but also because I genuinely love it. And I've always done what I love. I really do love A, marketing, and B, running my own business.
Yeah.
I grew up, apparently, when I was a little girl, my mum would ask me what I want to do when I grew up. And I'd say, like, I used to say I wanted to be a property magnate, which, like, how I knew those words, I don't know. Teacher's pet.
Amazing.
But I think I kind of always wanted to build something.
Yeah.
And so it's a lot of work, a lot of travel, and a lot of CrossFit.
Amazing. Love it. I think that's... what a backstory. That was perfect.
Yeah, there you go. That's a bit about me.
Snapshot on your life. And so the teacher's pet side, you obviously mentioned that quite a lot.
Yeah.
What's that driven by? Is that when we say teacher's pet, is that like, I want you to think I'm the best, or is it I want to be the best because there's an innate drive inside? Do you see what I mean? Like, I don't know if that makes any sense.
It's the latter.
Yeah.
I've always had a really strong desire to be as exceptional as I can be.
Yeah.
I think it's a real double-edged sword. Like, it's really, really got me to amazing places.
Yeah.
Because it's so infinitely abstract and unmeasurable, it's taken a lot of therapy to help me work out, like, how I can ever live alongside an idea that this, like, immaterial goal is never going to be realised.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, there was always a real I've always had a really strong desire to do better than my perception of what is possible for me.
Yeah.
It's not coming from anyone else.
No, amazing. I love that. I love that. And I think on the, like the sort of segue through there is very clear in terms of sort of switching off and I guess like when you're that driven and that excited and that kind of passionate about everything you're doing, I'm the same with the Savorist, and I think every founder is when they and if they're not, then there's a problem. But that creates its own issues within itself to go like, my life is my work and my work is my life, and there's no kind of cross between. Like how do you sort of manage that? Is that, I'm assuming it's a kind of ongoing thing that there's no kind of tickets done.
So two things. One, I remember so vividly about like 6 years ago, going to a house party and meeting someone, and they were like, hey, tell me about yourself, but I don't want to know what you do for work. And I remember thinking like, well, I've got literally nothing to say. I'm completely fucked. Like, I'll just turn on my heel and go to the bar. Like, I didn't know how to cope with that conversation. And then I moved abroad where I followed my ex-boyfriend. He was a journalist. He went to Delhi for work and I kind of went with him. And what was so interesting about that experience is for the first time in my life, no one cared about what I did professionally.
Yeah.
Because no one understood, because they have literally, you know, I'm like, I work for small food and drink brands in the UK. And they're like, sorry, what? Yeah. Such a million miles away.
Yeah.
And actually I was kind of there as his plus one. And so they were way more interested in what he was doing than what I was doing.
Yeah.
And that was really liberating in terms of like forcing myself to find my own identity.
Yeah.
And to become very comfortable with work being something that fueled me, but didn't fuel people's perceptions of me.
Yeah. That's a really interesting.
That I was being judged for who I turned up to that evening.
Yeah.
And that was like the places I traveled and the things I'd read and what I was listening to and like lots of other things that I could bring to the table and I could talk about. So that really helped unearth some of that like teenage, you know, I'm defined by my A-level results.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the other thing, which I guess was like a slightly less constructive experience, is I had a breakdown in March last year and spent 3 weeks like completely KO'd in bed.
Yeah.
And, you know, what happened was my brain broke. Yeah. In a way that I didn't know was possible.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about like, everyone's familiar with the idea that like, if you run an ultra marathon, you might hurt your ankle and not be able to do another run.
Yeah.
We don't talk about if you do like a work ultra marathon, you might hurt your brain and your brain can't do another bit of work.
Yeah.
We have a huge amount of language now for mental health.
Yeah.
But I think we don't fully understand what's at stake. 100%. And that was like, you know, I hate that that's what it took to teach me a life lesson, but it really did teach me a life lesson, which was like, rest is not optional.
Yeah.
Because I really can't sustain it. And so now I've got quite a strong ritual around lots of holiday that is like very strict.
Yeah.
I work super hard when I'm on, and that's often a 6 day week. That's often long days, but within that there'll be some like really clear markers of stuff that's non-movable for me.
Yeah.
And I'm just really like proactively in touch with my energy and have like no shame in saying, guys, I'm feeling a bit close to something uncomfortable. I'm done for the day.
Yeah.
So now I have some pretty strong boundaries.
Amazing. I love that. I think that, I mean, there's so much in that. And I think you also find when you take the breaks, you come back, well, like sort of more creative as well, and you kind of have that opportunity to get excited about going back to doing it again, and it's key.
Yeah, well, there's definitely been a journey for me in like the running of Copy Club, where for the first 18 months or so, I just had to do. I had to say yes to every single thing that came across my desk, irrespective of like how terrible the money was and how unsustainable it was and whether it's strategic or not. Like, screw strategic, just go.
Yeah.
Just like build something. And then there was a real shift as I built like what I have today, which is like an absolutely incredible leadership team and a team of just phenomenal people.
Yeah.
Where actually what's now needed of me is to make a ton of decisions.
Yeah.
And I cannot make decisions when I'm tired.
Yeah.
I can absolutely do like, I can move through an inbox faster than anyone else in the world. I genuinely think that's my superpower. But I can't decide how we're going to position ourselves or how we should respond to a particular problem or how to help someone in the team with something that's like emotionally or structurally challenging. I just cannot do that if I'm tired.
No. Yeah, that's that. I mean, it's a really good point. So just coming back to those 3 weeks when you went through that, how did you come out the other side and almost sort of rebuild again? Were you
slowly?
Yeah.
Slowly. I was very lucky to have a coach at the time in the business. So yeah. an old contact of mine from P&G, who's now an incredibly close friend, but at the time was just someone who I used to work with, had got involved, very light touch, doing some coaching that was kind of building. And then what happened was, you know, one day, I can't really remember the chronology of the day, but one day she sort of messaged me and said, "Are you okay?" Because she had a spidey sense I wasn't. And I was like,
yeah,
kind of in shower, crying, can't walk, or whatever the like inarticulate. I remember sitting on the floor of the shower, just being like, I actually don't think I can stand up.
Yeah.
And from there, she was like, right, I'm taking over the control of the business for 2 weeks. I'll call you in 2 weeks and we'll talk about it. And I was so like, there was no way I could challenge that. I was like,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Like that was, there was no conversation.
Yeah.
And then from there, we built things really slowly. So I went back up to, I think it was 3 hours a day. And then I got a co-working space. So I was going somewhere more like 9 to 5 for a bit. And yeah. I was sending her a selfie of me leaving at 5 every day. You know, I was just really building accountability.
Yeah, amazing.
And I don't remember it taking, you know, maybe it was another couple of weeks until I was back kind of full time. And then I, for a few months, took a week, a month off.
Yeah.
So like, did 3 weeks of full time, and then, you know, for a bit I was actively inventing reasons to have holiday.
Yeah.
So like, great, my mum wants to spend a week pottering around the garden, you know, that I'll take a week off to help my mum in the garden. It was it was really kind of actively trying to find ways to rest. And then I really remember there being a moment where I was like, no, I'm back.
Yeah.
And like suddenly I just felt amazing, completely kind of ready to like push on again.
Did you feel it coming?
I mean, I ignored it so hard that I didn't feel it coming.
Yeah.
But it was blindingly obvious.
Yeah.
You know, it was lockdown. I was working literally constant. I was kind of asleep. And I'm quite lucky in that I always sleep.
Yeah.
So I will go to sleep, especially with my healthy CBD addiction.
Yeah.
And then wake up, start work, you know, 5:30 a.m.
Yeah.
Finish at 8:30, watch Netflix while I'm doing stuff on Slack on my phone, take enough CBD that I fall asleep, wake up, go again. We kind of know.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, and actually, to be honest, some of this is because I have a boyfriend who lives abroad. I have no kids. My life is so simple.
Yeah.
That actually, second to like sporadically putting on a load of washing and like maybe going to buy another bag of peas and some rice cakes, like I have incredibly little that needs my attention.
Yeah.
Other than the business.
Yeah.
And I do sometimes think that, you know, all like, not only I need more housework, but like there's nothing that needs my attention that is brainless.
Yeah.
And so I have to kind of think about how I can create those distractions.
But I think as well that there's a really, like, whilst creating those distractions, like, is difficult now, like, as your life evolves, being in a position to really dedicate what we'll come on to now and Copy Club and the amazing business that you've built, like, as long as obviously it's not future at the detriment to your mental health, it's almost the kind of perfect storm. And that's probably it must have enabled you to then be able to be like, wow, like actually this is a good, like we're in a good place to be able to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's been very conscious. I've really decided to spend a few years absolutely going for it.
Yeah.
And I'm loving it. So it's not a complaint at
all.
No,
of course, yeah.
I guess I've become increasingly conscious of the like unconscious sacrifice.
Yeah.
So while I can say I'm going to spend like until I have a child, absolutely throwing myself at this.
Yeah.
Have I gone, right, well, that will mean that I will lose X many friends.
Yeah.
And I will get more grey hairs and more wrinkles. And I will, you know, have I like really worked through what that means?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think I do some of it subconsciously.
Yeah.
But I think that kind of worries me a bit, that I might one day go, oh, you didn't actually realise that you were putting your body under that kind of pressure.
Yeah. But then I think the way that you described you in your younger years, it feels like, and with a lot of founders that we have on this podcast as well, it's very rare that someone goes, wow, that's a great idea, I'm going to start a business. Or like they might go, that's a great idea, I want to launch the product. But actually deep inside someone from a very young age, your path was probably always going to go in this way. Does that yeah. make sense? Like, because of the person that you are and the way that you're wired.
Mm. Yeah, there was no way I was going to be middle management in a corporate.
No.
Yeah, I tried that for a bit and I was bouncing off the walls.
I've never worked corporate and I think I'd get fired if I did, because I'm just...
I think I'm completely unemployable.
Oh, no, yeah, mate. So I did an internship at a publication, a financial publication company, when I left, or I think it was the summer of uni, and I'd applied for it and got through this application process and went and did it. And I was very good by it. I was doing like 6 weeks there, and it was like basically telesales, but made it sound a lot grander and look quite good on the TV. And I remember like third, fourth day in, I sent an email to the CEO. I mean, this is a big corporate company. I sent an email to the CEO being like, why are we not targeting the student market? And like at the time, I was like, wow, yeah, this is a great idea. And now I look back and I'm like, he must have been like, who the fuck are you? Like, what? A, why are you emailing me, full stop? B, like, and it, like, it's just a funny, like...
I don't know, maybe that's what you should do.
The wiring is different. But anyway, let's come on to Copy Club.
Yeah.
Let's give a bit of colour to our listeners. I'm sure majority of the listeners know you and know Copy Club.
Yeah.
But it'd be great to kind of hear what you do for the brand.
Sure.
And like kind of the actual tangible, like what we were speaking about just prior to, yeah. to hit and record.
So Copy Club does three things. At the heart of the business is a community. So the community is a space for anyone who is thinking about marketing. So that might be you as a founder, because you're like, I've got to run this marketing department and I don't really know very much about marketing, or I know loads about marketing and I want to make sure I continue to know loads about marketing. So for you, down to the intern you've just hired who has no experience but wants to get involved in marketing. So what you get as a member of the community is access to a Slack group, you get a ton of events, dinners, supper clubs, the list goes on. And that is about giving you, one, emotional support, and two, technical support. So it might be, I'm having a really tough day, my direct report is driving me up the wall, she's demanding more and more, and I need somewhere I can go and talk to other marketing directors to just work out how I deal with this.
Yeah.
That's super important. Like, yeah. It's not like a soft skill or a light touch thing, like that's fundamental.
Yeah.
Or how do I produce a TikTok ad with no budget? Or has anyone worked out how to crack Reddit, or, you know, whatever. Or like, my videographer's just pulled out, does anyone know anyone available this afternoon?
Yeah. Amazing.
That sort of stuff. So that's the community. We then have two other services that have really come out of the need of what we've seen from having done this for so long. And I'm kind of 8 years into running this. So we're a funny business because we're both quite new in that there wasn't really a thought in my brain that we would be a business until about 4 years ago.
Yeah.
But for a long time, I was just running supper clubs and building a community because it was making me, frankly, really good at my job.
Yeah.
So I looked so good in interviews. I was like, oh yeah, that community I ran. I'm like, sure, don't worry about it. But I was also meeting like phenomenal people and just getting so much out of it.
Yeah.
So the other two things we run are matchmaking, which is our version of a recruitment service. So my experience as both a candidate and as a hiring manager was that like I wasn't getting what I needed from the recruitment industry as a whole. I felt like no one really understood the jobs that I was talking about. And as a candidate, I just felt like no one was listening to me. I literally just felt like I was talking to a brick wall because I just get sold stuff that was like fundamentally not what I said I'd asked for.
Yeah.
And I was getting no coaching. So I'd be put into a, like dropped into a role, but no one was like helping me through that process. So recruitment, but just done really nicely, run by really lovely people who put our members first.
Yeah.
And because we're driven as a membership business, the only thing that we care about is our members having a good experience.
Yeah.
So there is no interest in us shafting anyone because it's just such a short-term tactic.
Yeah.
So we really are kind of structurally set up to be nice, which I think is really important.
Yeah.
And then the second thing we do is we run a team called Brand Hackers, where we run outsourced marketing teams for startups. So that might be either a project where you think, I need a bit of brand strategy done, or I need my packaging, like comms hierarchy fixed, or I'm unclear on how my social's performing, and we come in and we do an audit or a piece of work or a workshop with you. Or it's, I just need marketing done, in which case we run that marketing team entirely.
Amazing.
And there's a team of eight in that business, that part of the business, who are just, like, to be honest, the most talented startup marketeers I've seen in the industry, and I've Amazing. Got a pretty good kind of eagle eye. And yeah. so I just sort of wait to find the really good ones and yeah. then start, like, the world's longest tenacious attack until I, like,
death by a thousand LinkedIn messages.
Yeah, exactly. until they come and work with us. And we've just got, you know, I just cannot believe the quality of talent in that team and
Great.
How fast they're learning as a group
yeah.
because they're working on 20 brands at once.
Yeah.
So how much their eyes are opened
yeah.
all the time to, like, similar problems, similar success stories, glances of something really exciting that we can build on and we can, like, jump on really quickly across all of our brands because yeah. of the way they're structured.
Yeah. Love it. And I know we're not recording this, but when you talk about that team, your eyes just light up. It's
yeah,
it's really refreshing to see,
so
like,
proud.
It's really nice because there's a lot, like, I mean, everyone always goes, I love my team, it's great, la, 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 right? Like, because everyone does love their team, but actually, like, you can see when you're speaking about it, it's not just a kind of sales spiel. Like, it, there really is, like, behind the eyes. It's really,
I mean,
refreshing.
Pam,
it's really nice.
Tate, to give one of them a shout out, who grew Tribe Snacks, I'd been watching her work for so long.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I had a catch-up call with Pam, and I'm like, oh my God, I've got a catch-up call with Pam. And in the call, Pam's like, I'm kind of looking for a new role. And I'm like, okay, Pam, like, is there any world where you, like, maybe would be interested in working with us? You know, and then 2 months later, it's her first day. And, like,
amazing.
I famously put on our Slack, like, we've hired the Pam Tate. And, like, that's really how I see it. And,
yeah.
you know, that's so true of, like, the entire team. I'm just bowled over by how passionate they are about what we do. About,
yeah.
like, not what we as a company do, but, like, what we as an industry do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just an absolute
amazing.
Joy.
Amazing. And it must be... So go back to sort of Propercorn and being in... role at Propercorn to now sort of doing multiple brands. Which do you prefer? I mean, this is probably a really stupid question because I know the answer to it because of what you do, but do you sometimes find it difficult to kind of chop and change between different brands or is it like...
It really suits my brain to work on lots of things at the same time.
Yeah.
A Cambridge degree really did not suit my brain.
Yeah.
Because deep... The idea of spending 4 days writing an essay makes me feel really shivery.
Yeah.
I'm so much better if you're like, you've got 25 minutes and
yeah.
then an hour later you've got another 25 minutes. So it really suits my brain because
yeah.
I can kind of jump in and out, which I guess is like a founder skill, but
yeah.
I'm kind of fortunate that's like one of my skills is I can do that.
Yeah.
So personally, no, I love it. And we hire really specifically for it because it's absolutely not for everyone.
Yeah.
A lot of what we say about hiring for our Copy Club team is our jobs are absolutely brilliant for the right person and they're terrible for the wrong person.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
that's fine. If someone at the end of an interview says, like, I don't think this is right for me, that to me is success because
yeah,
we've really worked that out.
Yeah.
And then I think the interesting thing is how do you build the right dynamic with a brand? So I
yeah.
did not want to work in an agency. Like, I actively do not want to be in an agency.
Yeah.
I don't want to do a PowerPoint, like, deliver it, close my laptop and swan
yeah.
off into the sunset, because that to me is like, just, that's not fun. The fun bit is when you have a go and it doesn't quite work and
yeah.
you're like, oh,
yeah.
let's all scratch our heads a bit and, like, work out how we, like, test this metal.
Yeah.
So the idea of, like, delivering something and disappearing, I find deeply unrewarding.
Yeah.
So I've really worked to build a way of working with brands
yeah.
where we are part of the team.
Yeah.
We are not your agency. And
yeah.
if you think of us as your agency, we're going to do really substandard work.
Yeah.
If you think of us as one of the team and you absolutely treat us like that, which means that we have to be allowed to say we don't know the answer sometimes.
Yeah.
Cannot be, well, you're meant to be the agency here.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, well, then we'll
yeah,
just
yeah,
make
yeah.
up something and then who's winning
yeah,
there?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's such a refreshing
Isn't
way of
it
looking
much
at it?
Better if we go, this is actually really hard.
Mm.
We're not sure either. Here's what we think are the answers. Here's the people we're going to talk to sense check this, because that's another thing. Because of the community, we're like,
you know, one of the things I'm trying to fix in the world macro is the idea that we're meant to have all the answers, which is, you know, goes back to my teacher's pet thing, actually, which is like, I think I spent so much of my life feeling like I had to. And now I'm like, fuck it, you don't. You can say I'm really stuck. And what the community does is means that we've got no excuse not to get to the answer. We can go and talk to 1,000 people, one of whom will know.
And then we go
100%. From there.
I think it's great. It's such a refreshing way of working because, I mean, we've all been there where you work with agencies. And it's exactly that. It's like you, like they sort of go away and they're like, we'll present back to you in a couple of weeks' time. And I'm like, but I, as a founder, I want to be involved in how you get to the end result. Like, because granted, like there's our new packs, right? We got to a result where we're really happy with it. But there were times through that journey where I was like, if you just let me be in the room, I could have, we would have like done this 3 weeks quicker because we've now faffed around with you not really listening to the original brief or, sorry, not really listening. Maybe I didn't brief it in the right way for them to listen properly. But it, like, whereas if you're working with someone and you can pick up the phone and you're like, that's where that the creative spark comes from, is taking the sort of experience and the great marketeers that you've got and putting them with other like-minded people to go, we've got 2, 5, 6 brilliant heads in this room that all have different experiences. Let's put them together. I think it's great. I think it's a really, really refreshing way of looking at it.
But it takes trust both ways round. Because, you know, one of the reasons why the agency doesn't want you in the room is because they're worried that they're going to look a bit crap as they do the bit where they're like, phew, this is tough.
you know,
they don't want that to be seen.
Yeah.
They want to pretend that they just, like, woke up with the magic answer. And so it takes a really different view of money, actually.
Yeah.
To go, we're not, like, just because we've paid you doesn't mean you're, like, A, a slave to us, or B, that you're a superman.
Yeah.
It just means that I acknowledge you know quite a lot about this, and I really value your input, and we'll get there together. And I don't think people always get that right.
No.
And the working relationships we have where that is understood are, like, so strong, and the business was like, what we're able to do for those brands is just like day and night to where we feel like we're kind of not being trusted from the outset.
No, it's I think it's a really, really fresh way of looking at it. And someone whose content I love on LinkedIn at the moment is Rob Mayhew.
Yeah.
Where he just calls it out, and it's like, it's so funny.
Kills me.
There's one of the ones that I find the funniest, that, like, it obviously he goes in and does his client pitches, but it's when he's like people leaving for bank holiday from the agency, and it's like walking through, and then there's like the posh intern that's going down to the country manor, and then like that. It's so good. It's hilarious.
It's just so well observed and really real.
Hope you're enjoying the episode so far. Untold Podcast is brought to you by The Savourists. We're here to keep you jiggling at snack time. We have a range of mega flavour, loaded ingredient, real nutritious snacks. They taste absolutely banging, and we have a brand new range of crunchets, which are made from black beans, edamame beans, puffed rice, seasoned with a Thai chili and a sizzling barbecue. Yes, I promise you, they are as delicious as they sound. Thanks so much for your time. Enjoy the rest of the episode and check us out, savourists.com. Ta-da! So there's obviously loads that I kind of want to cover, and I'm sort of conscious that we want to keep it in good time. So I know we spoke before recording a couple of weeks ago, and you had this idea around sort of FMCG, how traditional FMCG marketing... how, like, traditional FMCG marketing doesn't work in startups. And, when you sent me that voice note, I was like, this is going to be a cracking episode. and I want to make sure that we give it enough time. So, like, what do you mean by that?
My soapbox moment. So I think the context here is I voice noted Harry about a month ago and was like, I think FMCG marketing doesn't work. Yeah. I think we should talk about it. And he was like, game on.
Yeah. We had been speaking, like, back and forth on LinkedIn, but I was also just kind of like, I can't remember what I said. I was having a coffee. And it was like, I want to speak about it. And I was like, yes, this is so good. But it was just completely out of context. That's what made it so amazing.
And so funny. So, right. Okay, I think FMCG marketing mostly doesn't work. I think it does something. I think there's a huge disconnect between what, within a business, people say FMCG marketing is doing and what it's actually doing.
Yeah.
And my, like, absolute kind of central hypothesis on all things about good marketing is to be incredibly explicit about what your objective is for everything you do.
Yeah.
And if you know what the point of everything is, then you can be really clear on whether it's working,
yeah.
firstly.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it'll be far, far, far more likely to work than if you just do stuff because things might happen,
yeah.
which is really how most stuff works, then you end up kind of achieving nothing. So what I mean by this is, in reality, all FMCG marketing, until you have 60% category weighted distribution and you've raised a load of money, is done for buyers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Consumers are not going to see in a size that, like, of a scale that is significant enough to move the needle on anything.
Yeah.
They're not going to see your Instagram page. Your algorithm is so bad anyway that you're basically serving it to your mum.
Yeah.
They're not going to see, like, the sampling you did in 10 stores because actually there were only 50 customers in those stores and you're talking about trying to reach, like, 200,000 people. So, yeah. like, just do those maths on a graph and you're only talking to, like, 1% of your audience.
Yeah.
Some of them might open your email, but really they're such a small amount from the number of people that you see. So what FMCG marketing does, it is work for buyers and create noise in the industry that informs stakeholders in the industry who can pull the strings on stuff that makes bigger things possible.
Yeah.
That's what it does.
I completely agree. Yeah.
And that's great, but let's name it as that.
Yeah.
Let's stop, like, pretending that we're doing it for loads of other reasons too and being like, oh, but we're working a bit for consumers as well. And the reason that's so important is because it helps you stop doing a whole load of crap.
Yeah.
If you go, I'm literally doing this for a buyer, then you buy the billboard outside Waitrose HQ.
Yeah. Yeah.
You do enough that you can make a sexy slide on a deck so that next time you go into the meeting, you've got some cool pictures, but don't do anything more than you need for the photo opportunity.
Yeah.
You do an Instagram page that means that when someone mentions you in the lift and they check you out, you don't look like you've died. You know, like, it looks like you're alive and that, like, stuff's going on and you're, like, cool enough.
Yeah.
But I think it's really refreshing to say success for marketing at this point is for, realistically, 10 people.
Yeah.
Let's be really clear. Yeah, there are 10 people whose views matter.
Yeah.
You know, there's the buyer, there's the buyer's boss, there's the person in trade marketing who might have a word with the buyer. You know, there's a little bit of a kind of web of people that can be influenced.
Yeah.
And that's why I think getting LinkedIn right is super important.
Yeah.
Getting those sales meetings right is obviously super important, but, like, marketing really, really credibly supporting those meetings.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the first thing. The second thing is, you know, and Harry and I, we were having a really interesting conversation about this before we came on, like, on air. which was about, like, really understanding the objective of what you're trying to achieve within a business. So if you're just focusing on top line, then you can do a whole load of stuff that's going to smash out sales, but at, like, a terrible acquisition cost.
Yeah.
If you were using, like, performance marketing metrics,
yeah.
you know, like, literally the equivalent of, like, going out, giving a customer a fiver and being like, would you mind going into store and buying my product? Like, you can do a ton of that. That is incredibly productive if your objective is to drive top line sales, but do not kid yourself, that is absolutely destroying your bottom line.
Yeah.
And be really, really clear about that. I just think there's never enough focus.
Yeah, I agree.
Or, like, explicitness in, for the next 6 months, we are going after top line. That is the only thing that matters. The caveat is that the bottom line cannot fall below X.
Yeah.
Or, you know, right now it's all about bottom line, and so the only thing we're going to do is spend as little as possible getting extra distribution wins.
Yeah.
And that fundamentally is about marketing and founders having really, really open dialogue.
Yeah.
And founders being really transparent with their commercial situation and allowing the marketing team to, like, truly understand the real picture of what's going on and, and, like, really what is the thing that matters. Because it might be a buyer, it might be an investor. Actually, it could be that the only thing that matters is your FMCG marketing.
Yeah.
It doesn't do anything for consumers, but does a lot for five angels.
Yeah.
And so those conversations are so important.
Yeah. I think it's it's fascinating. It's really, really interesting. And I think you do a fantastic job of building your personal brand as well as Copy Club and the stuff on LinkedIn and the content that you put out, where it's just like just keep going. Doesn't matter whether you get 5 likes or 5 million likes. It's like
selfie every
just
day.
Keep going. love it. I think that it's such an interesting way of looking at it, but I also think, like, and as founders or as small businesses, challenger brands, whatever you want to call them, everyone always gets swept up in marketing as a word.
Yeah.
Whereas actually, when you break down marketing, you're like, you're using the word, not you, but we as an industry, or a small segment of the industry, use the word marketing as if we're going to conquer, like, it's just marketing, we're going to do it. But within marketing, that's data, that's FMCG, that's LinkedIn, that's Twitter, like everything about, there's like 15 different, well, probably like hundreds of different, if you really drill into it, where like, there's pack design, but then what we were talking about, there's two types of psychology behind pack design. They're their own things as well. And like, there's a lot of, and it's difficult because doing exactly what you're saying, which is essentially pick one thing and do it fucking well, within that kind of marketing as an umbrella, is like, it's such an interesting way of looking at it, because everyone tries to scramble after, like, we're exactly the same. Everyone's on the TikTok vibe, so we jump on TikTok and there's like stupid pictures of me turning into a train. Now, like, it takes
like
maybe
content.
Like five, takes like, it doesn't take long to do it, but there's no previous, I mean, we do have one now, and we've got a new guy starting with us who's helping us just kind of bed out a little bit more content, but there wasn't, we didn't sit down and go, what are we trying to achieve by doing this? It was like, I think probably every single person listening who's got a TikTok account for a brand goes, I want to do what Littlemans did.
And if I had like, a pound for every time I got,
yeah.
Can you just do that Little Moons thing for me?
Yeah, yeah.
No,
yeah,
I can't.
Yeah, it doesn't work like that. And more recently, Crispy Fantasy. They've gone nuts and it's fantastic to see. But fundamentally, I think there's two different things, right? I think obviously we've changed topic here, but the Crispy Fantasy stuff I love because there's a story to be told. But that's exactly to your point about FMCG marketing, is like, tell a story to the right people and then they will be able to pull the strings to elevate the brand. But
yeah, if that's what you need to do at that point.
Yeah.
Why that Little Moons thing was such a stroke of genius is that they'd pulled those strings.
Yeah.
The objective was then, we actually need to find a really powerful way to get a lot of people to go into store to buy something. And the objective became incredibly clear. So I always talk about who inspired business challenges, which is like a lame phrase I stole from P&G, but it's like, get someone who used to think something to do or think something else.
Yeah.
So for many businesses, the reality is that their marketing strategy is as simple as get the Tesco buyer who used to not know who I am to buy me.
Yeah.
That's all that marketing needs to do.
Yeah.
That then changes quite quickly to get 100,000 people who are in the ice cream aisle. Sorry, not even in the ice cream aisle. Get 100,000 people who have no idea what Little Moons are to run into store to buy Little Moons.
And film themselves doing it.
And that's like the creme de la creme. And so that then becomes your challenge. And so then in the case of Little Moons, they were like, right, well, TikTok is the way we're going to do that. And that is why that's such a brilliant piece of activation. But if they'd done that before the like, it goes without saying, if you do that before you have the distribution, then obviously there's no value.
Yeah,
there. So
it's crazy.
Just do that until you've got the availability.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So and it's then, just about being really, really clear. And I really think it comes back to the relationship. What I would say, so my hypothesis is that all FMCG marketing is basically a waste of time unless it is explicitly focused on trade, or you have distribution and then you're actually effectively getting someone into store to buy it, or at the point where you've got so much money and distribution that you can invest in brand building, amazing, and then it's a whole other ball game.
Yeah.
But like, well, let's be honest, that's not often the world we're talking. Amazing if that's where you're at. What I would say as a complete other to that is packaging is everything.
Yeah.
So if your packaging is substandard, no amount of TikTok, unless you do what Little Moons do, like really no amount of like sampling, Instagram, social, email is going to overcome the fact that if a customer is in store and doesn't see your product and want to buy it, there's a problem.
Yeah.
100%. So, and by packaging, I mean, as you referenced earlier, like, the design, but like fundamentally the comms hierarchy.
Yeah.
What are you telling a customer? What is your proposition?
Yeah.
Because so often the packaging brief just goes straight from the founder to the design agency.
Yeah.
It's like, well, where's all the strategy?
Yeah.
like that's the hard work. Well, not like that's the hard work. I'm not a designer.
That's the groundwork.
Yeah, that's the groundwork. Yeah. The design work is very
hard. You're so right, I'm sure everybody out there going back and forth, and I love our design agency. They're exactly what a design agency should be, because I hate them sometimes, but then I love them when we get to the end product, right? But one of the biggest struggles and setting the groundwork that you're talking about that helps people get through it is when you go, I need to put high protein on pack because it is part of our strategy. And they go, yeah, but it just ruins the aesthetic. And you're like, no. Like, this is non-negotiable. Like, it's going there. But if you haven't, it's very easy. I've sat in meetings before where I've sort of gone, oh, yeah, maybe you're right. Then I've come out and be like, what are you doing, Harry? Get back in there and tell them no. But because if you don't have that kind of, this is exactly what I want, and it's kind of left up to someone that designs, and fantastically, but don't necessarily have the background in sales and marketing within food and drink, they create products for it. I'm taking a very kind of literal example here rather than on a macro level.
You're right. And like the aesthetic of a Tesco Extra is quite lacking.
Yeah.
I really get it. If it's all about context, and that's why the brief is so important. If you're taking the same, if you're readdressing your packaging to be served like in a Savoy minibar, then that probably becomes a totally different thing altogether. You have to understand how this stuff is going to live and breathe in the world, and you have to review creative in the world. That's my other big bugbear. Don't sign off packaging not in a supermarket.
Yeah.
Like, put it on a shelf and
really
then sign off.
It's really grotty light, isn't it?
It's like really grotty light. There's like 17 million visual things to look at.
Yeah.
You walk down an aisle so quickly, like, what looks good on your iMac does not look good.
No, yeah.
Like, at checkout.
That's a joke. I think the one time where, it just sums it up every single year is at Christmas. And you know when, like, you maybe go to the supermarket at Christmas, and I've been a few times in the evening where it's dark outside, you listen to Christmas songs on the way in, it's so lovely in the festive mood, and then you get in the supermarket, you're like, this is so shit. Like, it's just, there's some sort of naff Christmas tree in the corner. And, like, you just, any other time, you're like, it's okay, I'm just going to the supermarket. But at Christmas, you're just like, there's just, like, why are all the staff wearing bits of tinsel? Like, it just kind of, you're never going to make it sexy. Like, they're there for a reason, and that's it. Like, there's...
It also feels so like a temple of consumerism.
Yeah.
It's that tinsel, the purple celebration boxes, like peering over
for
you.
Yeah,
it's like, there's just so much stuff that I'm being told to buy. And I think that for us is probably kind of how every weekly shop feels like for anyone.
Yeah.
Where you're just like completely surrounded by choice. And and like with our budgets, you know, just for me, it just comes back to like with our budgets and our target run rates, we have to sell product to someone who has no idea who we are.
Yeah.
You cannot afford to touch every customer before they get to shelf.
Yeah.
You simply can't. And so you have to be converting at shelf.
Yeah.
And if you're not converting at shelf, then your price, your product, or your packaging are wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting, isn't it? Like, because that leads me on to when we had Jack Scott, co-founder Dashwater, on the podcast a few weeks ago, and we had a really interesting conversation about their wonky campaign that they ran, their above the line campaign, and he said that they deliberately made a choice on their billboards to not put where they were stocked, because it takes away from the brand world, and it almost has that like slap in your face call to action, go to Sainsbury's, and it's almost like we're now selling you something, whereas when you take away where you're stocked on a billboard, it's kind of slightly more of a... There's still a call to action there, but it's a lot more subtle.
Yeah.
And I think that's the same with the packaging, where you're like, if you can subtly sell it through call to actions on pack that doesn't need POS, that says buy me, buy one, get one free type kind of hard sells, that I think it's quite an interesting... I don't really know where I'm going with this, other than like I found it quite interesting.
You can argue it both ways round. So the alternative would be... on a billboard where I cannot buy you because it's a billboard, what you want to do is put the idea in my head.
Yeah.
When I get into store, you don't want the idea in my head. You want me to buy it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Useless to anyone. It's just in my head.
Yeah.
So I think I'd think about it the other way around, where I'd say out of store, it's about building familiarity and trust and a bit of recall.
Yeah.
And then when I see you in store, I want to be incredibly clear on why I am actually going to buy you.
Yeah.
So whether it's like the like calorie free message that Dash don't put on their out of home.
Yeah.
But is more, I actually can't remember what Dash packaging looks like, but what is it? What's that thing that's going to like reassure me that it's the purchase to make at that point? Yeah. Because, you know, and I do a lot of, like, my time is really split between FMCG and, like, D2C, like, e-com brands. And that's actually really helpful. I find that, again, to my point on being really comfortable doing lots of things at once, which is, like, something that suits my brain. If I'm building a performance marketing campaign, I'll be actively thinking about what's going to drive awareness, what's the ad that's going to make you be like, oh, that's pretty. What's going to make you think like, oh, I'm kind of interested in them. And what's the ad that's going to make you think I'm doing it now?
Yeah.
And actually, it's exactly the same journey walking into a supermarket.
Yeah.
So the point of the TikTok is to be like, they're cool. I'm interested. They're swimming around somewhere in my subconscious.
Yeah.
Then the point of the email that I've signed up to is to tell me the founder's story so that I'm feeling a bit more intrigued. And then the point of that packaging is to get me to close the deal.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. It's like there's so many touch points where you can reach people, right? And I don't know what the stats are, but I how many touch points before someone actually does buy? I think it's like
I can't remember what the number is. I feel like it's 7 because the number is always 7 for everything. If in doubt, probably.
Except for here, we're not allowed. I used to have a boss that said you know, like he used to ask us how we were going, and he said, but you're not allowed 7.
Because it's just a naff, but I think my point is that the way you get out of the blocks as a small brand is by you have to hack that cycle.
Yeah.
You cannot afford for it to be true of you. And this was such a tough lesson I had to learn at Propercorn when I came from P&G, where everything was data led and everything was mapped out. And Cassandra said to me, you have to have trust to take, you have to have the faith to take a leap of trust in creativity or something. And you know, my P&G brain was like, that's completely ridiculous. Like that sentence is ridiculous on so many levels. Like, like, sorry, I do not have faith.
Yeah.
Like the power of creativity, like what on earth?
Yeah.
And I remember it was like quite, you know, Cass and I had a very tumultuous start to our relationship because we were like chalk and cheese. And that's kind of, that's why I was hired, was to be antidote to that kind of, to this creative thinking. And I remember so vividly her saying it to me and me literally leaving the meeting and just being like, this is unbearable. Like I cannot operate in this world.
Yeah.
And, you know, what she was saying, I now understand, which is that like our jobs is to pull the rabbit out of a hat.
Yeah.
We have to somehow take a tiny pot of money and make it do something that is completely disproportionate to that money.
Yeah.
And that in really simple terms is you cannot afford to reach a customer 7 times before they buy you because you would have spent £100 on marketing to a customer who's going to spend 70p at checkout. Lo and behold, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
And so instead, you've got to find a way to hack that relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting, isn't it? Because I guess, like, you take the steps that you can and then you just got to jump, right? You kind of...
Well, yeah, and I think that's why I come back to, like, all FMCG is marketing is broken, because if you kind of carry on as though, well, I'll just do a bit of everything and it'll probably be all right, the odds are it won't.
Yeah.
When if you go, I've got way too few resources to do any of this, so I'm just going to do one thing really, really well, because that's going to get me the next thing that's going to unlock the, you know, that's basically, you know, Game Boy style, that's going to get me to the next level where like the gold coins go like, and then that means you level up and then you go, right, new objective, I'm going to do everything against that one objective to get to the next level.
Yeah, I love it.
And you have to plot that really clearly.
Yeah.
Because you've got to know what those building blocks are. But I think that allows you to use your resource, which is money, but it's also time.
Yeah.
Because I think the other thing that no one talks enough about is that the biggest bottleneck for small businesses, way before you've worried about money, is time.
Yeah.
You've run out of time, actually, mostly before you've run out of cash.
Yeah.
And so I think the way through that is just to be very single-minded and then go, right, well, there's a whole load of stuff I can stop doing.
Yeah. No, I think it's fascinating. Amazing. And then one thing I want to... I actually spoke to a couple of people that you were coming on, and someone came, sort of messaged and said,
"Oh God,
can you ask?" I make this sound like fans are writing in. It's not. It's like a friend of mine who I was just speaking to, and she asked for you to kind of just go into a little bit of detail about your LinkedIn strategy as a personal brand and Copy Club, because it is. it's fascinating, and you do it in a way where it's like, when I'm on LinkedIn, I use LinkedIn all the time. I love it. And your face pops up all the time on it, but it's in a really unaggressive way. Like, you know how you see some people that come on and just like, oh, bore off? Like, whereas you manage to keep it relevant to your audience. That sounds ridiculous, but it's relevant to the audience. You're giving something back. How, let's take the content out of this. Strategically, how do you build a personal brand or a business on LinkedIn? What are the kind of key metrics that we can give people that they can take away? Sorry, that was a real Harry Topin waffle, but...
I'm here for it. okay, you show up as yourself all the time. It's kind of that simple.
Yeah.
I've got really, really comfortable being very vulnerable in public, which really helps.
Yeah.
I've got my, like... tools to creating a little bit of distance that keeps me sane, but everything I write is genuinely from the heart.
Yeah.
Not much, I think, doesn't get written on LinkedIn. There isn't loads else going on. the key thing is that there's a time delay.
Yeah.
So that's what, if I'm having a bad day, I'll post about it 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
And so that means that on that bad day, I don't need to feel like the universe is watching me.
Yeah.
So that for me is just a really helpful thing. Yeah. And I guess people often say to me, like, well, I just feel really uncomfortable doing it. And so I've just found little ways that do make me completely relaxed about it.
Yeah.
It might be helpful to like talk through my process. Yeah, just definitely. To make it really, really tangible. Yeah, 100%. So I have a note on my desktop called LinkedIn Ideas. I will leave a conversation like this with like five, and I'll just like send myself an email or voice note myself on my cycle home or put on my little LinkedIn note. And then on a Sunday night, I have a ritual where I write up my posts onto a Monday board. I then like look through my camera roll at like the ludicrous number of weird selfies I have, because I now like become a sort of, it's like the muscle memory is now so strong that I'll just like walk around and be like, oh, taking pictures of myself, which is like not something I ever thought I was going to become. But I have this process where I like put it all together on a Sunday night, and I'll do like, at the moment I'll have like weeks and weeks and weeks of potential content like on that. There's like a whole backlog on that.
Yeah.
And then, so I write the stuff that's come into my head and like attach the pictures and plan it all. And then I just like organize what I want to post that week.
Yeah.
Which is typically completely random.
Yeah.
So like organize, I just choose five. It's not like, oh, I feel like this kind of Tuesday is gonna be thought to it.
Two for Tuesdays, gotta go
then. Exactly. There's never like it might be like, oh, this is happening right very rarely, but if it's like this is actually really relevant today, then I'll like post it.
Yeah.
And then I have an assistant who schedules it, and so like I don't run it. I mean, I'm on LinkedIn all the time.
Yeah.
But I'm not, it's not like I have to have the, I don't have to think about it.
Yeah.
Which I think is also really important.
Yeah. And it's great, because I think from a strategy and what you've detailed out there is it's taking LinkedIn seriously is basically what it's saying. I think there's a lot of people out there that, and I've noticed this more recently, is I've tried to push more content out on LinkedIn. It's always previously been something that if as a brand you're posting on Instagram or TikTok or Twitter or whatever it is, you plan out your content. But LinkedIn sometimes gets left behind on that, and it almost feels like it's slightly more impulsive that people will go on and kind of comment or post on it, whereas actually taking it seriously and sitting back and mapping out your content like you would for any other channel is a really interesting way.
I mean, it's me practicing what I preach.
Yeah.
So, to take it back 5 minutes when I'm like, work out what you've got to do, my view was that the one thing Copy Club needed was awareness in a relatively small pond.
Yeah.
And therefore, the one thing I was going to do was commit loads to LinkedIn. I decided that probably 18 months ago, and that strategy has not wavered.
Yeah.
And then about 8 weeks ago, I was like, I'm also going to do loads of podcasts.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all we do. We have no other marketing.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah.
We haven't spent a penny on anything. We don't. Yeah. Brand hackers don't have a website. we really have kept it simple.
Yeah.
And so it's exactly what I was saying, which is like,
yeah,
I made a really clear decision that was something that I believed could do a lot for me personally and for the business. I think that's the crucial thing as well. Like, my life is genuinely so rich because of the time I put into it.
Yeah.
The conversations it triggers are just fascinating.
Yeah.
Like, screw the business. Of like, it's great when someone pops into my inbox and is like, hey, we're recruiting for someone. I'm like, cool, it's working.
Yeah.
But actually so much of that is just like really, really interesting people.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I would say for anyone who's thinking about it, like, go for it, but don't dip your toe in.
Yeah.
You're not going to get anything back if you paddle.
Yeah. I think that's everything, though, isn't it? But one thing that I've really taken from this conversation that we've had is you do a fantastic job, and I think more people should do it, of making people very aware that you are a human. And by that, I mean the way that you've come on and spoken about the tough times you had, where you had to take 3 weeks out, by just then saying that you've got better at becoming vulnerable. It's like, by doing that, you almost, like, it comes from a realness that you're a human, but you actually almost create more of a story that people want to engage with because you're being vulnerable. Does that make sense?
Like, so it's super conscious.
Yeah.
And it's formed by, like, there's two like life experiences that kind of like defined that as the way I see the world.
Yeah.
And like, openness is a, like, I have my personal values, and one of them is openness. I think it's it's incredibly important to how I want to operate in the universe. So my old boss at P&G, who honestly taught me more than anyone else in the entire world, so I don't mean this like cuttingly of him, basically just gave me a load of feedback about how I sort of wasn't P&G enough.
Yeah.
And how, like, I move between ideas too fast and all of this stuff that, the more and more of it I heard, the more I was like, you are turning me into a robot.
Yeah.
Like, I see what's happening here.
Yeah.
And because I'm a teacher's pet, I was working so hard at being the person they wanted me to be.
Yeah.
Like, literally throwing everything at changing my personality.
Yeah.
And I had a moment where I kind of looked around leadership within the organisation and was like, no, I don't want to be like any of you.
No.
Like, that would be a real disaster if I end up like you. And yet I am working literally day and night to do a thing I don't want to happen.
Yeah,
like, this is wrong.
Yeah.
And then it comes back to that time in India, which was such a formative time for me, where I was there, I'd been there for a few months and my relationship was kind of falling apart, which I think kind of made it all feel all the more pertinent that I needed really strong human connection. And I had this really big network at that point of kind of acquaintances where I'd met in this like quite diplomatic diplomatic forum where I was like the girlfriend of the journalist.
Yeah.
And I, you know, knew lots of people's names and I had lots of people's numbers in my phone book, but I had no friends.
Yeah.
And I kind of just, I remember coming back to the UK for Christmas and New Year and going back and being like, well, sod it. I've got to do something different to make friends. And I thought and wrote a kind of essay thing, which is again another thing I do. I do lots of writing if I'm stuck on something.
Yeah.
And I went back to, well, where are all the times in my life where I've built meaningful relationships?
Yeah.
Like, let's think about my 10 best friends. Where did that come from? It basically came from either loads of time, so I've known them for a really long time.
Yeah.
Or we've got really hammered together.
Yeah.
Fundamentally.
Yeah.
And that was, or someone's had a crisis.
Yeah.
So there's like a couple of mates who, there was one particular friend at the time I was thinking of who we'd become really close with something really awful had happened to her, and that had meant that we'd come close. And it made me think, right, well, vulnerability is a really important thread to that.
Yeah.
So I literally decided to overshare aggressively.
Yeah, I know, it's great.
And it built the most amazing relationships. Like my personal trainer, who had to deal with me, like, telling him, you know, literally I walked into the gym and I was like, I'm going to overshare to the point of no return.
Yeah.
And I would tell him everything about my falling apart relationship, and he's a friend for life.
Yeah.
So it's really conscious, and it's really, really conscious in terms of how I'm building Copy Club internal culture.
Yeah.
Because I never, ever want my team to feel like they're in a place where they have to be something they're not.
No, yeah.
It was horrible being in work environments where I did feel like that.
Yeah.
And the only reason I want to build a business is to create a space for those who work for me where they can show up as them.
Yeah.
So it's nice that you recognise it, but it's also very, like, I'm very determined about it.
Yeah. No, I think it's it's brilliant, and I think it works. It's clearly working, right? So, and now, just as we sort of start to wrap up, give us what's on the horizon. I mean, I'm sure there's like millions and millions of things on the horizon, but like a distilled version.
70 million new
And how can founders or brands or anyone get involved with the community?
Yeah.
And,
Everyone listening should join Copy Club Community. Yeah. It's 20 quid a month, and it should be a load more, because I really, really want it to be democratic. I want you to be on your own making cupcakes in your kitchen with no revenue and think that this is worth it,
yeah.
and to be a Heinz and think that it's worth it.
Yeah.
It gives you a sense of community. It gives you a network. We have a Founders Family Supper Club, which is just a really joyous evening, which we host every 3 months. We go out for a lovely dinner. It's just a really, really nice evening to feel yeah. connected and part of something. So I'd really say, like, just get involved. And, like, yeah. one of the biggest, like, the biggest challenge we have at the moment is that loads of people are like, yeah, maybe. It's like, just
yeah.
do it.
Yeah.
So, like, that's kind of my plea is, like, if you're there thinking, like, oh, yeah, I've heard of these guys, just sodding sign up.
Yeah.
and, like, if it's not what you want and you're like, this isn't what I thought it was going to be, just LinkedIn message me and tell me that.
Yeah.
Because that's totally fine. There's no pride yeah. from my perspective, but I can action that.
Yeah.
And then if you're hiring marketeers, if you've got great marketeers who need training, if you are thinking about marketing strategy in any sense of the word, I think as we touched upon today, like, that's way more than just your social. Like, we can yeah. help with your social.
Yeah.
But if you're also like, something more fundamental isn't gelling.
Yeah.
Yeah, just get in touch. And we've already talked about how obsessed I am with LinkedIn, so that's probably the yeah. best way to track me down.
Great. Amazing. Love it. And I am part of the Copy Club community. I love it. And also the lunch and learn sessions that you run.
Yeah.
I'd highly, highly recommend listeners to sign up.
Yeah, once a month sure. you can hear me waffle about marketing.
No, great. I mean, the one that I loved was the Weetabix, I can't remember his name, but the guy that came on from Weetabix.
Gareth Turner, yeah, he's yeah, incredible.
It was brilliant. Like, it was really fun, but also great to know that you see huge campaigns like that. And again, like, he did really well at kind of being vulnerable and actually saying, look, this is a once-in-a-lifetime, like, play here that yeah. just kind of didn't really... We didn't think it was going to work, and it worked. And actually gives you so much... I was expecting him to stand that before I go off waffling again, but expecting to sort of sit there and talk about how well thought out it was, and it was going to be like this amazing campaign, and how amazing Weetabix are, and how amazing he was, and it wasn't that at all. It was the reality behind how they struck gold on a campaign. Is that it was the Weetabix and Baked Beans collab that they did, and how every single challenger brand after that then tries to do their own collab, and like just everything about it was just genius. I think it was, and so yeah, that's like one example of some of the stuff. But do get involved in it. And Lottie, thank you so much for coming on.
Pleasure.
I feel like we could sit here and sort of open a bottle of wine and just spend the next like 6 hours.
We'll do it another time. We'll come back.
Absolutely. Do so. Look, thank you so much for coming on, Told, and we'll catch you soon.
Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you so much for listening to Untold. As always, we are so grateful that you give us a little bit of your time.
We really, really are. And as ever, please do give us some feedback. We love it. So any reviews, please subscribe, obviously, as well. It helps us with the old ratings position in the podcast, wherever you download them. But yeah, please do let us know what you thought of the episode. We love to hear what you guys think.
And as always, this episode is brought to you by The Savourist. We make lip-smackingly delicious savoury snacks that can be found at www.thesavourist.com or the.savourist on Instagram and TikTok. Ciao for now. See you next time.